I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to King of the Road. It's time for part three, and it's an episode I am so excited for. We are going to be focusing on the wonderful decade of the 90s. It's a decade where football changed dramatically. It has never looked the same since, and it's a decade that changed Chelsea Football Club forever. I'm delighted to welcome my guest today. A lot of you will know him already. He has an Instagram account called CFC_90s. You should definitely check that out. But it is a joy to have him here and to discuss this decade, and also a joy to say that you're here off the back of a win.
Just about, Raw.
Wasn't easy, was it?
I think we were, for 80 minutes, struggling.
Watford were good.
Yeah,
Watford
they were
really
very
good.
Really impressed with them, actually. They passed it well. They pressed well. I think their manager's going to go far, if I'm honest. I think he's one to look out for.
Yeah, they played very well, but
we showed good spirit, though. I was, you know,
we were resilient, weren't we?
I was pleased with the spirit. At 2-1 down, I mean, you know me, I'm quite negative. I was sort of already writing Conte's leaving speech for him. I think we did show what we know Conte's teams have got, and that is a bit of
yeah. I completely agree with that, because people were drawing similarities between this team and the Mourinho team from a couple of years back that really let, you know, a championship winning team fall apart. But crucially, that Mourinho team never ever showed the spirit that we saw the other day against Watford. Yeah. So I think that the, you know, the seeds are there, and you know, we now have a big game. We're going to be playing Everton, hopefully getting to Wembley. We're on the up.
We're on the up, and you know, my thoughts on it. I think that, you know, the Carling Cup, as I still call it.
Coca-Cola Cup
even, that was the 90s one. The importance of that is so big to me.
Do you know what, mate? It's so interesting to hear you say it, because I completely agree with you. I completely agree. And anybody who watches the YouTube channel or has listened to this podcast previously, they will know that I have so much love for the domestic cup competitions in this country. Are we a dying breed?
I think we are, yeah. I think if you ask the kids and the younger generation, that comes very, very low on their list of what is important in football now. But to our generation, the day out at Wembley, of our face painted, and the whole thing about getting to Wembley just was so huge. But the amount of times we've been to Wembley in the last 10, 15 years, for games that even haven't had that much significance, sort of takes the gloss off it for me. Someone mentioned the other day, if we were to draw Tottenham in the FA Cup in the quarterfinals, we could end up playing there twice before we've even got to the final. And I think that's a big part of it for me, is that whole day out at Wembley has lost its appeal.
Wembley's certainly not the hallowed turf that it once was,
definitely.
But it is still a special day out, isn't it?
For me personally, I mean, I still can't watch Arsenal. I mean, I measure a defeat in one way, how often I can watch it back, and I still haven't seen Costa's goal from May.
Yes,
that's how much that hurt me.
I agree. So, you know, you're a father of three lads. Do they feel like this about the cup? You know, I see them at the bridge all the time. Do they feel like this about the cups?
No interest. No,
really?
No, I can't remember who it was last season. Bristol City Rovers.
Yeah, Bristol Rovers.
And both of them were trying to make excuses on the morning of the match not to go.
Really?
Yeah. It hasn't got that appeal. It's that whole Premiership.
Yes.
Champions League, obviously, is a real good one from this season, because I haven't seen that so much. But no, the cup competitions are a dying breed, I think. And
really?
I think it's such a shame.
Well, do you know what? We're going to take you back in time now to a time when the cup competitions meant everything to us.
Everything.
They really did,
yeah,
didn't they?
Yeah.
I think my first foray into the brilliance of the FA Cup actually came in 1994.
Correct, I agree.
And it didn't end particularly well, but it was an incredible road to that final.
It was unreal. I mean, 94 is still etched in my memory because it is the last time I think I cried at a football match was the final against United. But as you say, it started with a glamorous 0-0 draw with Barnet, if I'm correct.
It did, yeah. We brought them back to the bridge, didn't we?
Brought them back to the bridge, beat them 4-0, and I think we then won our run. The game that sticks in my mind in that run was, well, there's a couple actually. Wolves at home,
apologies, yeah.
Because everyone was on the pitch after.
Yeah.
And as a 15-year-old, that is like, it was major at the time.
Yeah.
It wasn't too often that Chelsea fans had much to celebrate on the pitch at the time, but everyone got on the pitch with the big flag, the original flag, ran towards the East End with it. So that was major. And then we went on to play Luton at Wembley.
Kerry Dixon played,
got the best reception I've ever seen for an ex-player, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
There was definitely near on 45,000 Chelsea there that day at Wembley. And it was... It felt like we was on the verge of something. Not quite there, but just a taste. We was getting the taste of it. We was getting the taste of being back at Wembley.
Well, we managed that year. Obviously, we played Manchester United in the final. And I think there was an air of optimism around people at Stamford Bridge because we'd beaten them twice, hadn't we?
We had. We'd beaten them twice. Gavin Peacock scoring in both games. So,
we played the team that eventually won the league. Our towels were definitely up.
We actually held them 0-0 till half time in the cup.
We hit the bar as well.
Hit the bar, Peacock again.
Yeah.
Then the heavens opened and David Ellery showed up, gave a dodgy penalty. One of them was a dead cert, even though we didn't think it at the time. And then, I mean, they were double winners. Let's not get it wrong. They were Ferguson's first great team. There's no two ways about it.
Yes. And at that moment, in the rain at Wembley Stadium, I think a lot of people thought that our chance had vanished.
Yeah, definitely.
That was it.
We'd had our day out. We were going to go back to
mid-table mediocrity.
No more cup runs. But luckily, we had a man called Glenn Hoddle at the reins at the time, who personally I think is probably our most important signing ever. If I'm right.
Well, off the back of him, we then managed to...
There's no Hullet. There's no Hullet, there's no Hughes without Glenn Hoddle.
We managed to start attracting players that were previously not really on our radar.
Exactly. We had a European run the next season.
We did.
Off the back of that Wembley, because obviously...
Which also could have been very different, because Manchester United went into the Champions League.
Correct, yeah.
We, as a cup winner, went into... As the cup finalists,
yes.
Went into the Cup Winners' Cup.
So for the first time in 20...
It was a European football at Stamford Bridge.
Years or whatever it was. I remember special night against Bruges.
Yes, we won two. We had to overturn a defeat.
I still haven't witnessed an atmosphere like that.
Yeah.
Personally, I think I was in the benches that night in front of the West
End. I was Matthew Harding Lower.
And for 15 minutes before the game, you hear about that now in foreign grounds and stuff like that. For 15 minutes before the game, the ground was filled and it was loud, and I still get hairs on the back of my neck now thinking about it. And there's no doubt in my mind that the fans cheered them goals on that night that got us through.
I can remember. Do you know, it's funny, isn't it? Like, you can remember so many things from that era so vividly, and yet if you ask me to name the four scorers who, against Watford, I'd probably struggle.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's 'cause in terms of like that, I can remember. I think Paul Furlong, he made a block on the edge of his own D and ran the length of the pitch. The ball broke, and then he turned it in, just sort of gently passing it into the net.
And what was unique about then, which we always seemed to, we had to wear our away kits at the home games. It was strange.
It was the tangerine and graphite, wasn't it?
For some reason, in the Cup Winners' Cup in them days, any photos that are abandoned about now that I do put up, and the away kit pops up, it's at our home games, which is, I don't know what UEFA was thinking about, if I'm honest.
And then, so, we overcame Bruges.
Yeah, we overcame Bruges, but then we came up against Zaragoza.
We made a fight of it, because we lost convincingly away.
I think Poirier
was the man.
He turned it on against us.
Yeah.
Probably had his name marked down after that as a potential signing, probably, but... I don't think it was a very successful trip.
No, we lost convincingly away.
Yes.
But then at Stamford Bridge,
I watched
again, we nearly
overturned the away game. Back in them days, they used to do beanbacks.
Yes.
I watched, I watched the away game on Beanback, sat in the upper tier of the Matthew Harding, and they actually put an old
cinema projector screen onto
the pitch. So how times change.
So
in them days, the Cupman's Cup wasn't, I don't think it was even on telly at that stage. I don't think there was a Channel 5. There was no Channel 5. BBC may have had the odd game, but it doesn't get like the exposure football gets now, which we will touch on, the difference in football in the decades, was part of the reason that the exposure wasn't there. So these sort of games, we had to go to Stamford Bridge to watch because there was no other way of watching it.
Yeah. And sadly, it wasn't to be.
No.
But something happened not only at Chelsea Football Club, but something happened in England and Britain around 1997. Things changed.
Yeah.
There was a new government brought in.
There was an optimism in the country, without a doubt.
It was an era that has since been dubbed Cool Britannia.
That's right, yeah.
New Labour came in with new ideas for politics and what was going to make Britain different and pull it into a modern era and make it a hub of the world again.
Yeah.
And there was, like you say, there was an optimism.
This was all on the back of Euro 96 as well, which was obviously absolutely huge at the time. England, the last English football team that I can remember that I fully was on the edge of my seat watching. Gazza in his pomp.
Well, there were some wonderful results for that England team in that 96 tournament
but
as well.
But the whole country united as I've never, ever seen it.
Yes.
I don't think we ever will see it again, if I'm honest.
No, it was. There was just an air of optimism. There was a good vibe around the entire
like
country, wasn't
it? Well, I know we look back with tinted glasses, but it does feel like it was sunny every day while Euro 96 was on. But I don't know if that's just looking back with my rose tinted glasses on, you know.
But yeah, it was a wonderful period. We're off the back of a successful Euro 96 for England. Sadly, not as successful as we hoped, but it was good. New Labour came in. Things were on the up. The music scene of Britain was as vibrant as it had ever been. It was back in its pomp.
It was as big as it had ever been since the 60s. Blur and Oasis on headline news. You know, this was Stones and Beatles levels. It was front page of the newspapers.
It was record-breaking gigs, wasn't it? It was Nebworth for 3 days, which had never been done before.
Spot on,
It was Beatlemania.
Yeah, Beatlemania.
It really was. And it wasn't only, you know, the indie music scene was very vibrant, and it wasn't only, you know, as much as Oasis get the headlines.
It wasn't even indie. This was dominating mainstream charts. That's
it was.
Difference.
Well, because you had wonderful bands, off the top of my head, you had bands like Ocean Colour Scene, who were incredible bands. But they weren't even the main act.
Exactly, yeah.
They were the background, spot on. So it was, and then, I mean, you can take it away from the chart music and what people were aware of. There was a really vibrant underground scene, which I sort of still look back on very fondly, like the garage music scene.
Garage, yeah, that
listening,
was late 90s.
Yeah, listening to pirate radio stations and that. There just seemed to be a passion for the arts.
Yeah, DIY.
It was people seemed to be on the up.
I think it was the exposure thing as well. We still hadn't reached a stage where everything was so accessible.
Yeah.
So to go to a gig was still a unique experience. To go to a rave was still an experience. You couldn't go on YouTube and watch what someone had done the weekend before.
Yeah.
You had to experience it yourself. So
yes. Yeah.
It goes back to that whole different generation of actually having to go do something yourself without being able to just go online, which the kids now, that's all they know, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm not one of these people that says internet's all bad, but the fact that to watch there's nothing worse than, I think, at football, at music, at shows, any live act, looking at 40 mobile phones recording.
It
really winds me up.
I know. People aren't living for now, are they? No. They're looking forward to watching it back later or Instagramming it or whatever. But everything was on the up. Things were on the up. And that was no more apparent than at Chelsea Football Club.
Down
because
Kings Road,
1997, there was a new wave of players that were suddenly looking favourably at Chelsea. Chelsea were making these signings for big money at the time. Exciting players, foreign players.
Bosman ruling came in, didn't it?
Exactly.
So that changed a lot. Premiership as a product was on the up. It was on its way to reaching what we know now.
Definitely.
It hadn't quite obviously made it. Football was just in between coming out of the dark days of the early 90s, where the experience post-Hillsborough was still quite shocking as a supporter, as a young supporter. I still remember going to away games, even home games, the facilities and the way the police and the stewards treated everyone was atrocious. There's no denying that. Standing at football, etc., run, you know, the concrete. And so 97, I think we sort of reached it's that.
Suddenly changed.
Yeah, well, yeah, not overnight.
But it was there was a shift. I think there was a shift in the country, and it demonstrated itself at Chelsea because the new wave of players were in. And then all of a sudden, Chelsea Football Club is about to have one of its greatest ever days. And that is a cup final at Wembley.
May 97.
We got an opportunity to do it again.
Exactly.
What went wrong in 1994, there was an opportunity here.
And interestingly, I remember my dad saying at the time, 67 and 70, there was we learnt a lot from 67 to 70, and it felt like this
was
our time.
And it was the same
time.
Thing, because 67, we played Tottenham, the Cockney Cup final, and we lost.
70, we came back stronger.
Beat Leeds. Now, same again.
Yeah, this was
3 years later, we're back.
This was our time, and I mean, the goal that Di Matteo scored will live long in everyone's memory that experienced that, because it was so important to everyone involved with the club. I think it was it changed so much for everyone.
And I now know what I'm about to say is a very flawed statement. I completely concede that everybody looks back on their, you know, childhood years, their formative years, with a lot of nostalgia and therefore positive thoughts. Yeah. However, I'm going to say it anyway, and I think it's true. That team was my favourite ever Chelsea team. And I can't put my finger on why. People often have the conversation with me and they're like, what about Munich? And of course, you know, I have an awful lot of love for that team as well.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
But for some reason, this team, it felt like something special.
Yeah, they were ours. It felt like we finally had a team to be proud of. Obviously, we'd grown up hearing about the 70s, but obviously hadn't experienced any of it ourselves. So to finally have a team that we... And I know Ken Bates used to touch on that a lot. He really wanted to get rid of the ghosts of the 70s. So when we finally had a team of our own that we could be proud of, it felt like... It couldn't get any better, or really. I remember walking down the King's Road 97 after the cup final and thinking, "This is it. This is the peak."
What was it about that team, though? Like, even in your own memory, what was it that makes you feel such an affinity?
I think it was full of characters. Definitely full of characters. When you know, you look at you got your Frank Sinclair and your Eddie Newton together. Dennis Wise is in there, obviously.
Were our youth boys.
Frank and Eddie came through, so there was that connection with the fans. That they'd cleaned boots at Harleton.
Yeah.
Obviously, Dennis Wise had been with us pre-Premiership. He'd grown a lot as a player. But then you also had our bit of stardust in there. You had Robbie Di Matteo, Gianfranco Zola and Mark Hughes, who sort of gave us them heroes that we'd longed for so long, you know?
Yeah, it was a wonderful balance, wasn't it? So players that you feel an affinity with, like Eddie Newton, Frank Sinclair, Dennis Wise, all wonderful players in their own right. But then in amongst that, you have arguably one of the greatest Premier League players
ever. My favourite ever, Gianfranco Zola.
He's... Yeah. I don't know if Chelsea had ever seen a player, you know, we had had some wonderfully gifted players over the years, but in terms of what he could do and the ease at which he did it, I'm not sure that we'd ever seen the light before.
No, I hadn't, but no way, no way. I mean, growing up early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, we hadn't been blessed with anything of the sort. And I think that he was part of, the big foreign invasion. But what came across with Zola was the way he embraced the club and the way he embraced the whole culture of... I mean, I think he saw it as a second chance.
Yes.
He had fallen out of favour in Italy.
Parma, wasn't it?
We were a great team in the 90s, by the way, when you look at their lineup. But no, I remember going to Blackburn for his debut and he wore a shirt.
Yeah, he scored.
No, he didn't score.
Didn't he score a free kick?
No, not away at Blackburn.
No, at home.
Yeah, Everton. That was Everton.
To Everton,
home.
Right.
Blackburn
right.
away was his debut.
Right.
He came on wearing a shirt that looked like it was sort of size.
Too big for him.
Oh, about five.
That's what happens to me when I play football, Rob. See me on a Thursday night playing for London City. That we've got a really generous chairman, right?
Yeah.
And he turned up the other day when we were playing. We play up in Tottenham, on White Hart Lane. And this chairman turns up, who I've only met once before, really nice chap, and he opens a box full of all this gear, like all night, branded, people, you know what people are like. My entire team have gone rummaging. I was like, if there's any small, like I really do with it, smallest was medium. Right. And I put it on, I had to give it away.
Yeah, too big.
Massive. Yeah. It looked exactly like Zola. I should wear it, really. If it was good enough for Zola, it's good enough for me.
You have 25, number 25.
I should get it printed.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it was, I mean, when you see him doing that and coming on, nobody knew, right, when you were up there watching him come on for a debut there, dressed like that.
No,
nobody would have known.
Must have been October 96, something like that.
Cause he can't have expected it to be this player that we're now talking about.
No, no, you don't know what you're... I've got to confess, I mean, at the time, I probably didn't even know who he was.
No, it was a different era. It was very difficult to keep track, wasn't it?
But obviously, we all know what he went on to do for the club. I think he was the final piece of the jigsaw that gave that team what we were looking for. I mean, let's not sort of put our tinted glasses on too much. The league campaign itself wasn't a great success.
No,
we weren't week in, week out sort of beating teams 8-0. Well, it's far from that, but it didn't need to be that.
Yeah.
If that cup run gave us the hope that there was that we had a team now that we could really be proud of, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? We've spoken about this decade, and it certainly was a decade in which the biggest change in football ever occurred. And we've spoken about the people that made it so and the cut run. We've managed to do the whole thing without talking about one of the most wonderful men our club has ever been blessed with. That's Ruud Gullit.
Ruud Gullit.
He actually deserves an episode on his own.
The thing with the 90s overall is that there's so many paths you could go down in terms of which way your conversation goes.
Well, actually, mate, that's a really interesting thought. There's a chance, depending on how this does, there's no guarantee that anyone will listen to Rob. We could just be screaming in the dark.
Mum will.
But if anybody aside from both of our mums and both of our missus listen, we could do a series. Listening actually like that idea, you know, leave a comment and let us know or whatever, because we could kind of focus on different parts
of this. With the Instagram page, I mean, I literally set that up on the back of being bored looking at 90s photos personally. And I thought, one day I just uploaded them to Instagram and the amount of comments that come through with people saying, that's my favourite ever team, that's my favourite ever period, that's my favourite player, that's my favourite kit. Kits especially, I mean, it was golden period for Umbro. If you look at some of the kits that Umbro were pulling out in them
really
days.
Good. But I don't know if people look back on them now thinking that they're really good. But I can at the time remember, I used to own it, but that tangerine and graphite kit, it wasn't viewed positively at the time.
No, you're right, you're spot on, it was negative.
It was really negative. And people now go, oh,
it's a cult classic.
Exactly.
Now looking back on it.
I used to love that white one. Do you remember the white one with the red laces? Commodore.
Oh, yeah.
That was beautiful.
Umbro, for some reason, went back to the laces.
Yeah.
Ipswich and United, I remember also.
But it was just a wonderful era, this, wasn't it? So it was a wonderful era for players and kits and... In amongst it, we found some silverware.
Well, that was the thing. We sort of managed to jump on the wave of where football was going. Luckily, I mean, we went on to win 4 trophies in 3 seasons, was it?
Yeah.
Including Super Cup.
We then went to the Super Cup. We won the Cup.
They were European champions.
Beat Real Madrid.
Yeah, European champions. It was no mean feat then at all.
We beat Real Madrid 1-0. Poirier.
Your favourite player.
Oof. Oh, don't.
That's a sort
that's
of...
That's a separate podcast.
See,
yeah.
I sit on the side of the fence that I still like Poirier. You sit on the side of the fence that you can't really mention his name.
Yeah, he's not for me. No. He's not one... He's
not
one
I like to look back on what he did. That goal against Sunderland.
It's because you're a more rational, normal person. And I completely admire you for
it. I've had a few arguments with a lot of my mates at Chelsea. And there's not... I'm in the minority, definitely. But he seemed to... He seemed... That goal against Sunderland is probably one of the best goals I've ever seen live.
There's no doubt.
And I can't erase that.
Oh, mate.
I know what he did. I know what he did.
When I cuss him down as well,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I would never... I'm not an idiot.
Yeah.
I completely... concede that watching him play football was a mesmerising, yeah. dazzling experience a lot of the time.
Him and they had a special
him and Zola and the goals that he would score. He was always wonderful for a big goal.
Yeah.
He would always get you one that mattered.
Before Lampard, he was our number
yeah,
eight goal
get scorer. get you the goal that really counted.
No,
and look, it's not that I think the reason that the hatred is there, it's that the hate is there because I loved him so much.
It's one of them.
It's if I'd never loved him so much, I wouldn't care.
I just think that his beef was with Ranieri and not Chelsea fans, and people read that either one way or the other.
We could go down a long dark alley here.
Yeah.
But
let's think positive.
We'll think positive. So we beat Real Madrid, and then we got to Wembley again, didn't we?
Early 2000.
Yes.
Yeah. Georgie Weir's season.
Georgie Weir, and we played. It was the last game. It was
at
the old Wembley.
Yeah.
And now that was a wonderful team because that season, like we played some lovely stuff that year. In fact, the Manchester United team
that we beat 5-0. That was a great day at Chelsea. I really do.
But they were
that.
Treble winners.
They were treble winners.
That was supposedly
Ferguson's greatest ever team.
I would say,
it is
Ferguson's greatest ever team. It's not only Ferguson's greatest ever team, it is the country's greatest ever.
Yeah,
it won the treble.
Yeah, the treble.
It's a serious treble as well. It involves a European Cup.
Yeah,
it's not even a domestic treble.
And they had to go some to win that European Cup as well, to be fair, looking back at it. They really did.
But I mean, I would never, ever knock that Manchester United team.
But
it was an outrageous...
That was a special day. I remember that 5-0 game very clearly.
So do I, because Chris Sutton got the opener.
Chris Sutton scored.
He got the opener after that clowning goal, didn't they?
Massimo Taibbi. We had Jody Morris celebrating with a trumpet, the old garage celebration.
Yeah. See, now there's another character from that era.
Yeah.
I don't think that Jody Morris gets the plaudits that he deserves. I don't think people look at him... His achievement is incredible.
Yeah, looking back now, obviously he was the first wave of young players that had to put up with the big influx of foreign players. So he had a lot to prove. He came through with Nichols and John Harley and Clement and they all sort of had made a couple of appearances and were moved on. But Morris seemed to be able to cement a place, play in big games. He played in Europe for us. He played in them big 5-0 games. I think the only thing that stopped Jody Morris progressing was Dennis Wise, if I must say.
Yeah.
In the fact that...
It was that model of
Wise
player,
had that centre midfield role sort of really sewn up for a couple of years where he was playing some brilliant football. And I don't think Morris could ever really get in ahead of him. And then Deschamps, we signed Didier Deschamps.
I mean, but... You've got to remember, Didier Deschamps, captain France to a World Cup,
we signed him off the back.
Yeah, not getting in a team ahead of Didier Deschamps.
Yeah.
There's no shame in that.
No.
And the thing with Jody Morris is, people don't seem to acknowledge, he grew up, as far as I know anyway,
he grew up
in West Kent.
I don't think anyone's ever been born closer to Stamford Bridge.
He'd grown up in West Kent, in the shadow of Stamford Bridge, and gone on to play over 100 games for the club. That's not
every
something.
Boy had a dream.
It was every
boy.
Boy's dream.
He was a ball boy at Chelsea.
Do you follow him on that? Did you see a picture he put up
with his tie and his big double
breasted
suit?
Funny, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like a sort of a Backstreet Boys haircut.
Yeah,
very
brilliant.
Funny. But players, you look at him at that age, growing up around that. Like Jody Morris, I think the reason that I'm sort of pulling at this thread is because Jody Morris is me.
Yeah.
He's just better at football than me.
Yeah.
But he's me, isn't he? He's a kid from, like, I'm from Kilburn.
Yeah.
He's from West Kent.
Yeah.
Both Chelsea fans.
Yeah.
He just happened to be a lot better at football than me, and therefore has gone
quite
to play for the club. I can't even disagree. I was going to try and spin myself there, but I thought a lot of people watching this would watch those YouTube videos and they'd see it's a very flawed game.
But technically, he was very, very good.
The touch, isn't it?
Yeah, the touch was great. He's still got it now, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think you lose that. But no, I mean, that late 90s team, at the time, we came within a whisker of upsetting the odds and winning the league. You know, if we'd have won the league the year 98-99,
yeah,
that would
it.
Have been the single greatest achievement by any Chelsea team ever.
The treble would have never happened?
The treble never would have happened. There would have been... Chelsea would have been on a different level without, you know, the massive financial. I know Bates did invest a lot of money behind the scenes, but this was not on the league of Roman Abramovich, etc. And I think we just ran out of steam that season.
I think a few injuries done us.
Injuries, poor.
Steve Guppy.
Guppy at home. Dubry's own goal.
Yeah.
And then we went out of the Cup Winners' Cup in Mallorca.
Oh, that Wednesday was night. Such a shame.
Yeah, because I watched the Leicester game in Magaluf.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, there was like hundreds of Chelsea in Magaluf early because we'd done the week out there. So everyone's in the bars watching the Leicester game. And that Guppy goal goes in and I think that knocked
just
the stuffing
deflated
out of
us. Yeah,
knocked the stuffing out of us.
Yeah, it was a huge shame.
But then, you know, we ended the season getting the Champions League football, which was, you know, for us at the time, absolutely... on a different level. It was nothing we'd ever dreamed of. To come from the cup win in 97, where we thought that was as good as it got. By 99, with them playing AC Milan at home in the first group game, there was a lot of people that night just looking round at each other.
Because it was an incredibly glamorous AC Milan
team. I mean, we
still
celebrate a 1-1 draw in the San Siro.
Yes.
You know, looking in comparison now, the group games we play, they just roll into one now,
yeah,
don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, but yeah. Then, the fact that we still sing about that Dennis Wise goal out there, yeah. It's very true. And this era now, it that we're discussing, it just seemed to incorporate everything that makes football so perfect, because I think a lot of people now, you know, there's a distinct movement called sort of against modern football.
Yes.
And people think that it's gone too far one way.
Yeah.
The period that we're currently discussing, I think, gets the balance right from all angles. Following football...
It was safe to take kids.
It was safe to take kids, but it wasn't sterile.
Correct.
It had the balance perfectly right. It was, you know, it was no longer pay on the day and whatever, but it was affordable.
Yeah.
The players were superstars, but they weren't beyond us.
Well, I used to go to Harleton training ground, sort of mid-90s, and we used to... I remember some holidays, we'd be behind the goal, and Zola's practising free kicks.
Yeah, you'd have to run and get one.
We're throwing the balls back at him. Yeah, I mean, now that just seems...
Oh, it's a different world.
I explain that to my sons, and they're like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
They're in a different world now. It's that gap is so big now that we've sort of lost that connection, I think.
And it has gone beyond that. Like, I think the disparity between the fans and the players now, I think the reason that Antonio Conte is so loved at Stamford Bridge is because I think he fills that vacuum. I think people look at Conte, I certainly do, and I think he bridges the gap between players who I love but I don't empathise with.
Yeah.
Suddenly, Conte's diving headfirst he's celebrating a West Ham goal
the
way that I am.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he gets criticised for it.
Yeah, yeah, but only by a fool. But I think, do you know what?
I think
why characters like Morris and that are so important. Morris, Wise, Eddie Newton, just people that you can empathise with as a fan makes so much difference, doesn't it?
I think that, going slightly off subject, but something you've touched on there, I think the Italians have still got that mid-90s.
Lord of Roma support the other night.
It was unreal raw.
Yeah.
I was sitting next to him. I was in the East Lower.
Yeah. And with the boys?
With the boys. And they didn't watch 1 minute of the game. They watched the Roma fans.
Of course. It's far more...
I was almost pleased that they were watching the fans, because I'm thinking, well, they get what...
An appreciation of the culture.
They're not sort of scared or threatened by it. They're actually saying, wow, Dad, look at them fans. And I think the Italians, because they've had their... I mean, they've been out of the Champions League places in terms of final rounds, etc., for quite a while. But I think their fans and players have still got that connection that we seem to have mid-90s.
Yes.
And Conte, obviously, is aware of that. He knows he's Italian. He's not been in England that long. So when he jumps into the crowd, that's perfectly normal to him. That's what he does.
I think you're right. I think they do certainly get it right a lot. I think that Italian football gets a lot right, and the fan culture there is very impressive.
Yeah, and it reminds me of where we were mid to late 90s, I think.
Yes, it's true, because it isn't the way it is now.
No.
And I don't, you know, I think that people like to make a case for different teams having good atmospheres and whatever, but whatever spin you want to put on it, or whatever blinkers you want to wear with regard to your particular team, there is a problem with atmosphere in British stadiums.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
It wasn't the case in the 90s.
I don't think that's ever going to change now, though.
No, I think it might.
I can't see how that ever returns to where it was, if I'm honest, Raw.
I'm not sure. I mean, it has to.
If you look at your Swansea, your Stoke, where you've got the small capacity, it's a lot easier to generate. As soon as you go into your 50s, 60s, then you've got that. You've lost something, I think.
Well, I think what happens is when you go into your 50s and 60s, it's not 50,000 fans who are willing to sing.
And who are there for?
No, I think what happens is you get a lot more corporate sections of a football ground. Like when Stamford Bridge is remodelled, we're going to go up, we're going to jump, 12,000 seats?
Mm.
That 12,000 seats is going to allow. We're going to go to 60, aren't we?
Yeah, 45.
And my maths is off, isn't it?
Yeah, about 19,000, 18,000 increase.
All right, there's yeah. If I knew how to edit, I'd get rid of that. I just don't know how to do it. so we're going to go jump 18,000 seats. You know that's going to equate to only about 700 to 800 new seats for the average fan. It's all going to be for corporate supporters.
Yeah.
So unless you really galvanise the rest of the ground, which I don't know if that's a priority for the club or not, my guess would be not, then it's going to be a very flat atmosphere.
I think Tottenham's going to be a big test.
Because they've got that one haven't they?
They keep harping on about having this big one end, but I don't think that whatever they do will be White Hart Lane, personally. I don't think they're going to be able to replicate White Hart Lane.
I think they're in with the best chance.
Because
they seem to have had the fact that we're even having a conversation that they've put the effort into it.
You've got to remember, you've got three other sides of the ground, though, Raw.
But you can make an atmosphere off the back of one ground. I know that the rest of the ground pipes up, but even when I think, you know, the Dortmund is the famous example where you've got the wall.
Yes.
But even coming back to sort of British football, I can remember being at Liverpool, say, I don't know where it'd be now, 5, 6, 7 years ago. We lost 2-0, it was freezing, Fernando Torres scored two.
Oh yeah, great.
Just before we signed him, actually, I think.
When he scored.
And I can remember that entire Kop, which is one, bouncing in rhythm to that Fernando Torres song. It does happen. I think one level of support can generate an atmosphere. I think the problem is when you get grounds like Wembley, like Arsenal, where you've got that ring in the middle.
Yeah, which we've got.
Corporate
have.
Ring, are we?
Yeah, we've got. Well, no, they're saying it's not going to be corporate. They're saying that they're going to guarantee that the three tiers at each end are for seats only, but I don't know.
Well, I think...
I mean, what's even going on with the ground? It seems to have died a death anyway.
Well,
I don't know if they're waiting on planning.
I think, you know, last I heard, Tottenham are looking at staying for another year.
Yeah, I've heard
they've got some electrical issues or something.
If Wembley, for me, is going to be...
It's terrible.
It could kill us, Raw. I've got Tottenham friends who have been to one game. Season ticket holders have been to one game
this season. It's very troubling, mate. I'm really worried about it as well. But
there were... Who came up with... Was it your idea? Who said about Fulham? Someone said about Fulham.
Fulham. I think Fulham's a great place to share, but it's never going to... It's not a viable option. It's a great idea
Roman
for me,
puts... The money on the table says we're going to build you two brand new stands. We'll share with you for 3 years.
It's thoughts like this, Robert, the reason you're not a millionaire. That's not how millionaires make their money, by giving it all away.
Think about it. Fulham, we knocked down them two stands.
Mate, there's something in what you're saying, but it's never viable.
And then all we've got to do, we can still drink on the Fulham Road, you know.
And that's their priority as well, mate. Where you have a drink is definitely the forefront of Roman Abramovich's thoughts.
That's all part of it, though. That's all part of the magic experience.
Mate, I agree with you. I think there's going to be a real problem.
You know, going back to the 90s, when I think back now, that our stretch of Fulham Road where we sort of socialise, as a teenager, I had 8-9 pubs to
choose from. From Shoeless down, Shoeless Joe's down to all the way down to the whatever just closed down.
Yeah, they're all closed down.
Yeah, the one that was it's just closed down.
But especially, I used to go from from the Wamba, well, we call it Jam Tree. Come the Revolution, it was called.
Come the Revolution, yeah.
Which was really good then. I mean, they used to have live bands in there after games. So that shows the connection that the Britpop bands used to play after games in there. So there was that connection between Chelsea
and music, into the music,
and then you could work your way from there and do literally 8 pubs to Fulham Broadway, 9-10 pubs.
What have you got there now? 1.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs. Yeah. I think Chelsea leave, then pubs are all gone.
Yeah, I think you are probably correct, but I hope you're wrong.
Unless you've got the Made in Chelsea crowd, obviously. I don't know if they generate enough.
No, they don't go out enough, I don't think.
No, I don't know if they generate. They don't drink as much as football fans.
No, this is it. This is it. But yeah, what happens with this new stadium is certainly something that we need to discuss.
And that was another major, when we talk about change throughout the 90s, if you look at the picture of Stamford Bridge in 1990 compared to 1999, it was
completely unrecognisable.
It was unreal.
Yeah.
Everything that changed.
What's the only constant? The East End.
The East End's the only constant. Yeah, we lost the Shed. No, we lost to Matthew Harding. I think we lost the Shed first.
I think I remember sitting in the temporary
shed
while they were building the day that Matthew Harding opened.
Yes, you're right.
I went to the Matthew Harding. Temporary shed. I was taken to the Matthew Harding to go in there on the opening day, and he couldn't get in. It was sold out. So we were go into there. The temporary stand.
And it became our home end on the back of that, really.
Yes. We lost 1-0, Everton, I think.
Right, okay.
If I remember rightly, it's Everton. Paul Rideout.
That's the sort of things you remember. That's what I'm saying.
If that's right, I need to check that. I think we lost the opening day. I think Paul Rideout scored for Everton. Oh, we lost 1-0.
Right. Yeah. It rings a bell now.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mad how you remember that. And I reckon, if anybody who's listening who has an affinity to this era will completely understand that. Yeah. Get that. Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Temporary Shed was really good, wasn't it?
For us. Temporary Shed was good. It's where Millwall were.
It was in 95.
Millwall in 95.
The whole thing was shaky.
But yeah, if you ask anybody listening to this now, here's a game that you've got to play. Name the person who missed the penalty against Millwall, because we're discussing that. Name the person who missed that penalty, which made sure that we were thrown out of the cup. And for a bonus point, name the Millwall keeper. Bet you they get those two right.
Yep.
I bet you they. You know the two?
I don't even have to think about it.
Right. I bet you everybody listening knows it. Yeah. Here's another question. Name the goal scorers from Nottingham Forest in a previous round of the Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
People can't.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. Yeah,
so funny, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so funny. It's etched in your makeup, isn't it? It's especially that Millwall game was.
It was police horses on the pitch, and that. I don't think it's ever happened since like that.
Headline news that was. Yeah.
Nothing.
Like that. I can remember. I was 15 at the time, and it was an eye opener.
Because we went away first, didn't we?
We did. We drew 0-0 away at Millwall. I weren't allowed to go to that. No. But the home game.
It's a local one too, as well, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, but my dad was. He put his foot down on that, which I was gutted about. But the home game was an eye opener. It really was.
Yeah.
Days are long gone now, but
yeah, and I think this is it though, isn't it? This is why slightly later in the 90s to this Millwall game, it was the perfect precipice.
Yeah,
because those days were over.
Yeah,
fans fighting on the pitch, police horses on the pitch, people being admitted to hospital by in the dozen are over.
Yeah,
but the atmosphere remains,
and the clientele.
The clientele aren't priced out yet.
Yeah.
And I think the players
still wasn't a business tool.
No, it was going that way.
It was starting to move that way, but people didn't take their clients to Chelsea versus Arsenal. They would go to the theatre or something.
Yes.
Now it's a massive.
It's a day out.
It's a big business tool.
Do you know what? I've enjoyed this so much. Thank you so much for coming on, mate.
Can I just say one more thing?
Of course you can. You can do what you like. You're the special guest.
We will be lynched if we don't mention one player.
Go on.
And he's just come to me.
Hit me.
Super Dan.
Love him.
He was, for me, you know, very, very special at that time because he was...
He's an incredible man, Dan Petruski. Do you know what his daughter's name is?
Chelsea.
Yeah. It's a special thing, isn't it?
He just came to me thinking about my favourite team. We can't mention Dan Petruski's criminal.
No, Dan Petruski was a truly, truly incredible player. Do you know my favourite Dan Petruski? We can finish like this, actually.
Yeah.
Giving your Dan Petruski moment.
Yeah, I've got one in my head.
I've got one. Ready? Or can I go first in case you've got the same one? And then I have to think of another.
I bet it's the same.
He scored a goal against Arsenal.
Ah, you've got it.
Oh, is it the same one?
And then he turns it's all right.
Do you know what? You can have the Arsenal goal. Over to you. I've got another one.
He turns around celebrating, saying, "What a goal!"
He swears. He just says, "What a brilliant goal!" But he swears, and you can lip read him perfectly. Yeah,
that's first game.
That was Vialli's first game.
They drank champagne before they went on the pitch. Apparently,
they drank champagne before they went on the pitch.
That was the story at the time.
Wow. Yeah, imagine that. And we won 3-1, didn't we?
Yeah, we knocked him out, made it to the final.
Di Matteo scored a
made it to the final, beat Middlesbrough. It was another cup in the bag.
And Di Matteo that day
scored an absolute blinder.
Yeah, incredible goal.
What was your Petrescu moment?
My favourite Dan Petrescu moment, I think we played Galatasaray at home. And I think we won 1-0. And there was a bit of a ricocheting goal.
They were a decent team.
The balls kind of dropped to him. And he was so good at this, you know. Bearing in mind, he's a right back. He's like sort of the coolest right back, both on and off the pitch. But the ball's dropped to him in the area. You've got the Galatasaray keeper coming at 100 miles an hour. You've got the defence sliding in. You've got the whole stadium eyes on you. And he sort of dummies a shot, stands bolt upright to control the ball, brings it down, dummies a shot, and then just rolls it in. No drama.
And
just
I think,
rolls it in.
As you say, to end on that, I think he does sum up that whole Chelsea era for me.
Yeah, what a note to finish on. The wonderful Dan Petrescu. Right, I think that sums it up. So firstly, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It's a joy to have you. It really has been great fun, this. Make sure that you check out the Instagram page. It's CFC_90s. And do us a favour. If you've enjoyed this podcast, will you leave a comment, leave a review and subscribe. And I will see you next week. Go on, you Blues.